is our top stories. The UN nuclear watchdog says Iran has started the process of enriching uranium to 60% at its Natanz nuclear facility. The Czech Republic expels 18 Russian diplomats over suspicions that Russian intelligence services were involved in an ammunition depot explosion in 2014. So in the headlines, an Italian court rules that far-right leader Matteo Salvini must stand trial over his decision to prevent more than 100 migrants from landing in the country in 2019. Welcome to the program. The International Atomic Energy Agency has confirmed that Iran has started enriching uranium to 60% purity. The agency said in a statement that two cascades of centrifuges at the Natanz nuclear facility have begun the 60% enrichment process. Iran kicked off the process on Wednesday, I should say, saying enrichment at 20% purity is also underway at the site. The move comes in response to last week's sabotage attack on the Natanz facility. Iran's lead negotiator in Vienna talks, Abbas Araghchi, has said the measure is in line with his country's commitments under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Regarding the talks in Vienna, Araghchi says while still some serious differences remain, work could begin on a common draft amid efforts to revive the nuclear deal.
Iran's lead nuclear negotiator in Vienna, Deputy Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi, says a new understanding is being reached amid attempts to revive the Iran nuclear deal, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA. Following a joint commission session with JCPOA signatories, Russia, China, Britain, France and Germany, Araghchi said negotiators can now start working on a common draft.
Drafting can begin at least in the areas where the sides share the same views. For that purpose, the Iranian delegation has prepared its drafts both on the nuclear measures and sanction lifting, and has presented its drafts to the other parties. And we believe these texts can form the basis for negotiations and a final agreement.
Although the nuclear measures that Iran needs to take to come back to full compliance are clear, there is less clarity when it comes to the list of U.S. sanctions that need to be removed.
China maintained that all U.S. sanctions should be lifted immediately. May it concern sanctions against Iran or its long-term jurisdiction measures affecting third country entities and individuals, including those on Chinese. So we are looking forward to such a drafting exercise.
Iran has remained steadfast in its position that it will only act after verifying the U.S.'s removal of all sanctions, including those imposed additionally or relabeled under former President Donald Trump. Although there have been no direct talks between Iran and the U.S., American delegates in Vienna have been engaged in talks with the EU coordinator and the other JCPOA signatories. Iran's lead delegate says there are still some serious differences that need to be worked out. For now, the expert working groups have been tasked with engaging in more substantive work for the next few days. Homa Lesky, Vienna.
Political commentator Mr. Jason Androhes says Iran has complied with the 2015 nuclear deal despite U.S. withdrawal from the accord.
Iran remained within the agreement and did everything it was supposed to, despite the fact that, quite frankly, no one else did. None of the European signatories dragged their feet on taking any kind of measures to compensate for the loss of the United States. The United States has wholly abandoned the actual agreement to begin with. Now, these new rounds of talks are basically the United States saying there has to be a give and take to return to the JCPOA, when it is the United States that is very clearly in the wrong here. They are the ones that should remove the unjust and frankly illegal sanctions that they have placed on Iran as a result of their own sabotaging of the agreement. So it's very hard to get a world actor like the United States to actually play by the rules, because they have, essentially since their creation, dictated to everyone else what the rules were and then never followed them themselves. I mean, that's kind of the problem when dealing with the United States, is that essentially their political landscape has no integrity whatsoever, especially when it comes to international relations, particularly those they see as threats to their imperialist order, Iran being one of those countries that is not under their domination.
Iran marks National Army Day, but once again, there are no nationwide parades for the day due to the COVID-19 outbreak. The Islamic Republic marks the event annually in April. An oppressor in Tehran, a top army commander, has given more details. Our correspondent Human Abedi reports.
Every year, Iran celebrates the National Army Day with showcasing new weapon systems, soldiers with machine guns, armored vehicles, and warplanes. But for the second consecutive year, the event will be marked in a restricted way and mostly in vehicles. In a news air in Tehran, the commander of Iran's Army Aviation announced the plan.
This year, the parade will be held in a restricted way due to the spread of the coronavirus in the country, and the Air Force will conduct this parade in the bases. Every year on Army Day, we showed some of our products and capabilities to the public, but this year, due to the pandemic, this important event will take place in military bases.
The senior commander also elaborated on the Army's new achievements and capabilities, saying they would be further boosted.
Today, we produce most of our needs in the country, and despite the sanctions, we have been able to maintain our operational capacity in the best possible way. We have the largest aviation fleet in the region, equipped with the best and most advanced navigation systems, night vision, and a variety of missiles and equipment. Next to our routine job, we also help people at the time of crises like floods, earthquakes, and etc.
Last year, instead of holding military parade, the Iranian military units held health service parades across the country to express readiness to assist the medical society in the battle with the coronavirus. Iranian armed forces have assisted the government to fight against the deadly virus since its outbreak by manufacturing necessary equipment and products, establishing field hospitals, and disinfecting cities. Iran marks its National Army Day every year on April 18th, but this year, due to the spread of the coronavirus, no parade would be staged, and instead some restricted programs would be held in motorcades. Human Abedi, Tehran.
In Europe, the Czech government expels 18 employees of the Russian embassy in Prague over their alleged involvement in a 2014 explosion in an ammunition warehouse. Prime Minister Andrei Babiš said Czech authorities have clear evidence linking the diplomats to the blast that left two people dead. Babiš said he received the information on Friday without explaining why it had taken to so long that as to react. The expelled Russian staff or embassy staff must now leave the Czech Republic within 48 hours. Russia's Interfax news agency cited diplomatic sources as saying the Prague has apparently decided to close its embassy in Moscow by expelling the diplomats. To another one of our headline stories, far-right Italian leader Matteo Salvini is to stand trial on charges of kidnapping and abuse of office for blocking a migrant ship from disembarking in August of 2019. A tribunal in the Sicilian city of Palermo said that his trial was scheduled for September the 15th. Salvini, who was the interior minister at the time, is charged with barring migrants from landing on the island of Lampedusa after they were rescued at sea. For 6 days, he refused to allow a ship carrying 147 mainly African migrants to land as conditions worsened on board. Salvini could face up to 15 years in jail if convicted. A former minister has dismissed the ruling as more of a political than a judicial decision. Still in Italy, and workers from the Italian entertainment industry rally in the capital, Rome, to protest against COVID-19 closures. The demonstrators demanded a swift reopening for the crisis-hit sector. The protests come amid a slow vaccine rollout, not only in the country, but across the whole continent. Meanwhile, Italy remains Europe's second worst-hit country in terms of coronavirus deaths. The country's death toll now stands at nearly 117,000 after authorities reported 310 new fatalities. The Italian health ministry has also registered over 15,000 more infections, pushing the country's total confirmed cases to more than 3.85 million. Britons take to the streets in multiple cities to protest against a new bill that makes it easier for the police to crack down on peaceful rallies. Rallies have been staged in London, Bristol, Brighton, Sheffield, and Newcastle. The protests are part of the Kill the Bill rallies, which called for the repeal of the so-called Police Crime Sentencing and Courts Bill. The legislation currently under review in the British Parliament allows police to take tougher measures against protesters. Opponents of the bill say it can be used to curtail individual freedom and violate people's right to protest. China urges the U.S. and Japan to immediately stop meddling in its domestic affairs and harming its interests. Beijing called on Washington and Tokyo to take the concerns seriously and abide by the One China principle. The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson also said in a statement that his country will take all necessary measures to resolutely defend its sovereignty, security, and development interests. The remarks follow a joint statement by U.S. and Japan expressing concern over issues relating to Chinese Taipei, the Diaoyu Islands, Hong Kong, Xinjiang, and the South China Sea. Beijing has rejected the statement as a gross interference in China's domestic and a severe domestic affairs that should have been and a severe violation of basic norms governing international relations. To the West Asia region, where Yemenis are marking the holy month of Ramadan amid ongoing conflict, siege, and rising prices. Meanwhile, the economic situation doesn't allow two-thirds of the population to access or afford enough food. Abdul Latif Al-Washali is in Sana'a.
The seventh holy month of Ramadan since the start of the war on Yemen has arrived, and Yemeni's struggle continues. The rising cost of living makes shopping for essentials a difficult task, as most Yemenis depend on daily wages.
We're going through a harsh economic condition. The ongoing blockade and war imposed by the Saudi-led coalition have put us in deep troubles. We hardly earn our livelihood and can't afford to buy food for Ramadan.
Tradesmen say they didn't earn much this year due to severe fuel crisis that led to the rising of prices of foodstuffs. Meanwhile, deteriorating economic condition has forced many companies to discharge thousands of their employees.
The purchasing power of people in Yemen has weakened significantly. The prices are rising because the Saudi-led coalition is still preventing entry of oil ships to Yemen. We are suffering greatly from the ongoing war and blockade.
Yemen is on the brink of famine and facing the world's worst humanitarian crisis, according to the United Nations, since Saudi-led coalition backed by Washington launched a devastating war on the war-ravaged nation at the beginning of 2015.
Despite the tragic humanitarian situation in their country, Yemenis welcome Ramadan with hopes of an end to war. They say their army's escalation of retaliatory attacks is pushing Riyadh further into a political solution. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
The Palestinians have slammed the United Arab Emirates over congratulating Israel on its so-called Independence Day, an occasion considered by Palestinians as a catastrophe marking the beginning of their displacement from their homeland back in 1948. Mona Kandil has more.
The United Arab Emirates has sparked anger among Palestinians by congratulating Israel on its so-called Independence Day, declared in 1948. The occasion is marked by Palestinians as the beginning of their displacement from their homeland. They view the day as the Nakba or Catastrophe Day.
What Israel is are marking is the day of our catastrophe, the day Palestinians were slaughtered by Zionist gangs. Hundreds of thousands of them were displaced from their homes and lands. The UAE should have sent a message to condemn the daily crimes and oppression committed by the Israeli soldiers and settlers against the Palestinians.
The UAE embassy in Tel Aviv published a tweet wishing a happy Independence Day to the citizens of Israel, posting a photo of the Israeli and Emirati flags side by side. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu replied by thanking the UAE.
The UAE has not only normalized ties with Israel, but also raised the ties to a new level. The UAE is also becoming Israel's partner in its aggression against the Palestinian people. The congratulation message comes as Israel is preventing Palestinians from entering the Al-Aqsa Mosque.
The UAE was among the first Arab countries to agree to normalize ties with Israel in 2020 under the so-called Abraham Accords, a pact brokered by former U.S. President Donald Trump. Bahrain, Morocco, and Sudan signed normalization deals with the Israeli regime shortly afterwards. Palestinians have angrily slammed normalization of ties between Israel and Arab states, including UAE. They say that since then, those states have been continuing to reward the regime and giving up the Holy Lands. Mona Kandil, Occupy Ramallah.
Brazil has recorded over 67,000 new COVID-19 cases as the country grapples with a new surge of the disease. The Brazilian Health Ministry also registered over 2,900 daily coronavirus deaths. The South American country has confirmed over 13.9 million cases so far and more than 371,000 total fatalities from the pandemic. Mexico is another badly hit Latin American nation. It's reported over 4,000 new daily cases and over 530 additional fatalities. Mexico now has a total of over 2.3 million COVID-19 cases with more than 212,000 deaths.
Diverse range of programs. Youth, spirituality, culture, Eastern tales, roundtable discussions, politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
After enjoying a public relations victory, the Biden administration has yet to offer any specifics on the nature of American participation in the Saudi-led war, says Alex Emmons, writer, in an article published under the heading, Month After Biden Promised to End Support for Yemen War, Congress Still Has No Details. Stay tuned for the details, please. More than 2 months after President Joe Biden announced that he would end all American support for offensive operations in the war in Yemen, including relevant arms sales, his administration has yet to detail what forms of support the U.S. has cut off. Biden made the commitment in a February address, but he also promised to help defend Saudi Arabia from missile attacks and threats. That left many members of Congress questioning how the administration would distinguish between offensive and defensive military support. 41 progressive members of Congress wrote to Biden asking him to clarify what forms of support he had discontinued and which Trump-era arms sales would be deemed relevant to offensive operations. The letter requested a response before March 25th, 6 years to the day after a coalition of countries led by Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates launched their intervention. The intervention was supported by the United States, and both the Obama and Trump administrations provided weapons, intelligence, and until 2018, mid-air refueling support for Saudi aircraft. But almost 2 weeks after the deadline, the administration still has not responded to the letter. A spokesperson for the State Department referred the intercept to the White House. A spokesperson for the White House did not respond to multiple requests for comment. Months after enjoying an initial public relations victory by announcing an end to U.S. involvement in offensive Saudi actions in Yemen, the Biden administration has yet to offer any specifics on the nature of previous or current American participation in the Saudi-led war. Said a Democratic aide with knowledge of the letter, who was not authorized to speak publicly. Although the letter expressed support for the administration's decision, it also asked for a detailed account of what role the Trump administration was playing in the war when Biden took office, which activities would be discontinued, and how the United States would support a diplomatic resolution. Congress has repeatedly invoked its constitutional war powers authority by voting to end unconstitutional U.S. participation in this war, the letter said. We seek to ensure that the Biden-Harris administration's Yemen policy will adhere to the limitations sought by majorities of Congress in the numerous bipartisan votes on this subject. The missed deadline comes as many of the same members of Congress are looking for ways to press Saudi Arabia to end its blockade of Yemen. After years of war, Yemen is suffering one of the world's worst humanitarian crises, and aid groups have criticized both sides for impeding the flow of needed goods. In an interview with CNN recently, Saudi Foreign Minister Faisal bin Farhan Al Saud denied that there was any blockade, claiming there is a mechanism with the United Nations to allow ships to enter, and the mechanism is continuing to be applied. But an investigation by CNN in March found that Saudi warships had held up more than a dozen boats that had been cleared by UN inspectors to dock in the vital port city of Hodeidah. A letter sent by Democratic Representatives Debbie Dingell of Michigan, Roy Khanna of California, and Mark Pocan of Wisconsin urged the Biden administration to do more to pressure the Saudis to lift the blockade. We strongly support a comprehensive political settlement that addresses all aspects of the conflict, including a nationwide ceasefire, currency stabilization, and payment of government salaries, the letter says. At the same time, a U.S. demand to end the blockade must occur independently of negotiations, the letter added. Both letters are a sign that Biden is struggling to recalibrate the U.S.-Saudi relationship in a way that satisfies the kingdom's critics in Congress while preserving the longtime alliance. On the campaign trail, Biden promised that if he were elected, he would make Saudi Arabia, in fact, the pariah that they are. As president, he has been far more cautious in his dealings with the kingdom. This is not the first time that Congress has expressed frustration. In February, after a long-awaited intelligence report found that the 2018 killing of Jamal Khashoggi was ordered by Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, commonly known as MBS, members of Congress criticized Biden's decision not to sanction the Saudi leader.
Food for thought.
Salam, and let us ponder on what the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him, has quoted from his cousin, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, on the rules of fasting. Whoever fasts during the month of Ramadan out of faith and seeking Allah's pleasure and guards his ears, eyes, and tongue from harming people, Allah will accept his fasting, forgive his past sins.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. This radio show is about Islamic lifestyle, and in each episode, we will be talking about a different lesson. Please stay with us till the end of today's program. Today's lesson, Merits of Eating Less. Well, we have discussed and we have been discussing some of the merits. Some of them are physical and some of them are spiritual and some are both, of eating less. In the holy month of Ramadan, this is an opportunity for all of us to eat less and take full benefit of these merits. Let's talk about another benefit of eating less. Another effect of less eating is less sleeping. We know that oversleeping is one of the most important factors of wasting our age, which is in the precious sum at our disposal for our hereafter's affairs. But hunger reduces sleep, thus providing opportunities for night vigil, the source of all blessings and bounties, and helps a human being in worshiping and supplications, which is the ladder for his attaining the most desirable spiritual station, which is also known as Maqam al-Mahmud. Another one of the merits of eating less is the ease of worshiping rather than servitude, because the one who is used to less eating will save a lot of time which otherwise must have been spent for making arrangements, purchasing, cooking, consuming, and relieving, as well as time spent for medical treatment, since in many cases the sickness is the cause of overeating. Therefore, he will utilize all this available time in worship and servitude. In addition to that, he will free himself from the hardships of arranging good foods and, you know, medical treatments, which means that he will be having more time, more free time, as well as more ease and comfort.
رمضان المستبين جاء بالنور المبين مرحبا بالتائبين مرحبا بالعابدين رمضان 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 القانتين.
Welcome back to your listeners. Today we are discussing the merits of eating less. Holy month of Ramadan gives us that opportunity where we can not only improve our physical condition, but also, more importantly, our spiritual condition. Well, one of the effects of eating less is the financial ability of a person to spend for charity, benevolence, pilgrimage, and other acts of worship, which require expenses. Because a lot of expenses spent only for providing unnecessary food items or for medical treatment as a result of overeating could be utilized for the above-mentioned worships. The advantages described are so vast in scope that the faculty of reason is helpless to describe their profundities. Especially the prime advantages are purity of heart, sharpness of mind and thinking, because thinking is tantamount to ultimate result, while our other actions and deeds are tantamount to preliminaries. Even thinking or meditating in itself is spiritual journey, while the other actions and deeds constitute the preliminaries and background of the spiritual journey. In the holy month of Ramadan, we have all experienced here and there that we do get an opportunity to contemplate more, to think more, to focus more, to think about things that are pertaining and related to our hereafter. Think about the affairs of our soul and spirit. This is another merit of and the benefit of the holy month of Ramadan, in which we eat less. But remember, if we eat more than usual, then most probably we will be deprived of these merits and benefits.
Forgive me for everything I've done in the past, when everything was going so fast, and now I just can't go on.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Stronger if you are by my side, Allah.
And welcome back to The Light. Malaysian farmers tap classical music and massages to grow one of the world's most expensive fruits, Japanese muskmelons. The farmers believe the method is the best way to grow Japanese muskmelons in Malaysia's hot tropical weather. They regularly rub the melons with a soft cloth or glove. That's a practice, the farmers say, enhance the melon's flavor. To stimulate their growth, classical music is played in greenhouses, and now all these efforts have paid off following constant trials. The farmers are finally selling their prized luxury fruits of labor on the market. A dozen lucky penguins have been returned to the wild after rehabilitating from malnutrition and anemia. The Magellanic penguins waddled back happily into the Atlantic Ocean off the coast of Argentina. They were distressed, malnourished, and dehydrated when they were found by conservationists. Some of them had lost their plumage due to malnutrition, but they recovered their feathers after receiving special nutrients. There are an estimated 2 to 3 million Magellanic penguins in the world. The cute birds are named after a Portuguese explorer, Ferdinand Magellan. They are mostly found around Argentina and Chile. People in Britain are marking the easing of lockdowns implemented to curb the coronavirus pandemic. Words like freedom, hope, family, reunion, and relief have been projected on the walls of the UK's most iconic landmarks, as well as shops and department stores, to show people's feelings. A British company commissioned a survey to find the words that best summed up people's feeling after months of lockdown began to be lifted on Monday. Those celebrating the event say reunion is the word that can best express their feelings.
The most powerful word in there for me is reunion. We've all been apart from each other, friends, loved ones, colleagues who are also loved ones, I suppose, in some cases, and really looking forward to getting back to my friends and family that I haven't seen for a long time, and imagine a lot of the British public are too.
The event comes as the UK has been the worst hit nation with a pandemic across Europe. The country saw a staggering number of infections and deaths for months. This prompted authorities to impose restrictions in an effort to bring the pandemic under control. Japanese Olympics organizers have unveiled the Games' iconic rings on top of Mount Takara, a popular tourist spot in the west of the Japanese capital, Tokyo. The unveiling of the rings comes as athletes around the world are ramping up training some 100 days ahead of the international event. The sad side of the story, however, is that the spectators are barred this time to accompany the organizers to mark and celebrate it. This is because uncertainties still exist over how and even whether or not the Games will take place. A surge of the coronavirus infections, including in Japan, is playing havoc with preparations ahead of the Olympics. Many hope mass vaccinations would help hold the event. Suppose you have run out of milk and you're not in the mood to shop for shopping. This is for you. Robots are lending a hand with grocery shopping in Singapore. A technology company has deployed two robots to a neighborhood for a trial period. Both named Camilo, the machines deliver items from nearby supermarkets and online shops to around 700 households. Designers say people tend to use robots in the pandemic era.
Especially during this pandemic period, everybody is looking at, you know, contactless, humanless, because in the robot itself, it has its own disinfection UVC light that we could do disinfection after every trip is being made by itself.
The robots are equipped with sensors and cameras, and they can carry up to 20 kilograms in their compartment. Users can track the robot on its way using a mobile application. The smart machines make 4 or 5 deliveries per day.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
A section of highway winding through mountains and over the waters in central China provides people with picturesque views as it connects multiple tourist attractions in the region. Guzhuao Highway is located in Yichuan City in Hubei Province. The highway has a total length of more than 10 kilometers. Almost 4.5 kilometers of the highway stretches over valleys and streams. The highway also offers convenience for self-driving tourists. In order to avoid deforestation and protect the ecological environment, building bridges was adopted to replace a traditional approach of digging tunnels and constructing roads in mountains.
Now, a group of researchers have discovered a new mammal from the dinosaur era during their excavations in Chile. The creature, called the Orotherium zen, meaning beast of five teeth, inhabited southern Chile's Miocenes region during the Mesozoic era of the dinosaurs. This is a very important discovery as it fills a gap in information on the evolution of a mysterious group of mammals that became extinct and have no descendants today.
The interesting thing with this finding, and this is based on a fairly well-preserved portion of the jaw with five teeth, is that this animal probably was an omnivore. So it fed on plants, probably insects and other types of food, a varied diet. It coexisted in the same place with other forms of life, including mainly dinosaurs. on rocks with a data that indicates that it was between 72 million, 74 million years old. And this is located in the far south of Chile, in the Magallanes region, in the town of Valle del Río de las Chinas.
The find may help scientists answer many questions they had for a long time about dinosaurs, mammals, and other groups. This discovery is more significant than other findings because a well-preserved jaw belonging to the dinosaur was found during the excavations.
To Egypt, where archaeologists have discovered an ancient city dating back to more than 3,400 years ago. The city, which is the largest ever found in Egypt, dates back to the Golden Age of the Pharaohs. It's located in the city of Luxor, some 500 kilometers south of the capital, Cairo. The city had almost complete walls, as well as rooms filled with tools of daily life, along with rings, scarabs, colored pottery vessels, and mud bricks. Archaeologists say this is just the beginning of the discovery.
We believe that this golden lost city is the most important discovery after the discovery of the tomb of Tutankhamun. I call it golden because it was found in the golden age of Egypt, 1391 BC. I call it lost city because it was lost. No one really believed that the city could exist here. The dazzling Aton. Three main districts. One area for storage. We found a big area for the storage of meat, making sandals, also sewing clothing, precious stones for making necklaces and bracelets. Pottery. Tell us about the relation of Egypt with the New Kingdom. We think that this is the beginning of the discovery.
Hawass says only one portion of the city has been discovered. The team will excavate the area of the temples in September. One other amazing thing about the discovery is that archaeologists found a large fish covered in gold that may have been venerated by the people living in the city. Archaeologists claim this is the second most important discovery since the tomb of Pharaoh Tutankhamun nearly a century ago. As a famous saying goes, everyone deserves a second chance. That's true about humans and animals. Mary is a baby alpaca from Germany. Her hind limbs were severely damaged in a traumatic birth, forcing vets to amputate one back leg. However, that was not the end of the way for this cute woolly mammal. A charitable farmer found Mary and adopted her. Now she has her own special wheeled harness that she works with. Mary's owner hopes to give her an artificial limb once she regains enough strength to carry weight on her remaining hind leg. That way, she can live as a regular happy alpaca.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
He appeared in the parking lot after dark, a hooded figure with a gun who immediately began spraying bullets in every direction. He stepped into the FedEx warehouse, a place where he had once worked, and continued shooting, firing into the open, according to one witness. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalists Sarah Barr, Mitch Smith, and Campbell Robertson. The piece is titled, In a Spasm of Violence, Indianapolis Faces Its Third Mass Shooting in 2021. He appeared in the parking lot after dark, a hooded figure with a gun who immediately began spraying bullets in every direction. He stepped into the FedEx warehouse, a place where he had once worked, and continued shooting, firing into the open, according to one witness. He shouted unintelligibly as he fired off round after round, and then before the police could even arrive, he had killed himself, leaving in his wake 8 people dead and at least 7 others wounded. On Thursday night, 15th of April, in a terrifying quick spasm of violence, Indianapolis faced its third mass shooting since the start of the year. And a nation already weary from a pandemic grappled with yet another bloody rampage only weeks after back-to-back mass shootings last month at spas in the Atlanta area and at a grocery store in Boulder, Colorado. It is a national embarrassment what's going on, President Joe Biden said in a news conference on Friday, 16th of April, as he repeated his support for a ban on assault weapons. President Biden added, And it's not only these mass shootings that are occurring. Every single day there's a mass shooting in the United States, if you count all those who are killed out on the streets of our cities and our rural areas. It's a national embarrassment and must come to an end. The mayor of Indianapolis, Joe Hogsett, told reporters of the scourge of gun violence that has killed far too many people in his city and in the country as a whole. What we are left with this morning is grief, he said. Grief for the families of those killed, grief for the employees who have lost their co-workers, and grief for the many Americans struggling to understand how tragedies like this continue to occur again and again. The gunman was identified by law enforcement officials on Friday, 16th of April, as Brandon Scott Hall, a 19-year-old teenager who used to work at the warehouse and who was already on law enforcement radar. The victims of the shooting rampage were identified by police as Matthew Alexander, a 32-year-old, Samaria Blackwell, a 19-year-old, Amajit Johal, 66 years old, Jaswinder Kaur, 64 years old, Jaswinder Singh, 68, Amajit Sekhon, 48, Carly Smith, a 19-year-old, and John Weisert, 74 years old. Chief Randall Taylor of the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department said he had been told that a large number of Sikh employees worked at the FedEx warehouse, and the Sikh Coalition, a national non-profit group, said on Twitter that at least 4 of those killed were members of the city's Sikh community. Officials described Thursday night's rampage as unfolding in just a couple of minutes, as Deputy Chief Craig McCart said to reporters. Around 11 p.m. on Thursday night, the gunman arrived at the facility, a huge warehouse lined with truck docks, sitting a few miles outside of the Indianapolis airport. there were at least 100 people inside the warehouse around that time, according to Deputy Chief McCart. It was a shift change, a pause in the night when some head home and others walk out into the parking lot to smoke, have a bite to eat, or listen to music in their cars. Armed with a rifle, the gunman got out of his car and pretty quickly started some random shooting, Chief McCart said. There was no confrontation with anyone that was there. There was no disturbance. There was no argument. He just appeared to randomly start shooting. Witnesses described sudden chaos and ducking for cover as a man with a rifle appeared at the entrance, shouting and firing. Kamal Jawanda, whose parents were sorters, who had been working at the facility on Thursday night, said his mother hid in the bathroom during the shooting rampage. When the shooting was over, his parents saw one of the victims, a person whom they knew, lying dead on the floor. "She's in deep sadness," Mr. Jawanda said of his mother. "She just can't stop shaking. She can't believe this kind of thing would happen here." Calls began coming into the police from several people at the warehouse who described a barrage of gunfire, the police dispatch turning into an account of growing horror. Police officers arrived to find people dead and wounded in the parking lot and inside the warehouse. The gunman was among them. The chaos within the facility and in the homes of the employees was intensified by the fact that many employees did not have cell phones with them. Jim Masilak, a FedEx spokesman, confirmed on Friday that cell phone access is limited within the warehouse, where packages are sorted for shipping to minimize distractions. Such policies are common in the industry. But for family members, not hearing from their loved ones was agonizing. From 10 p.m. until 10 a.m., it was a nightmare, according to Tammy Campbell, who was only assured of the survival of her husband, a truck driver at the warehouse, when he called her at the end of his all-night shift. "I called his cell phone 1,000 times, even though I knew he wouldn't have it." She joined other families of employees who had gathered early Friday morning at a nearby hotel to wait for news. The mood was tense, with television crews crowded outside and flags that had already been lowered to half-mast. A team of chaplains from the American Red Cross stood by. Mayor Hoxett arrived for a private conversation with the families. According to Deputy Police Chief McCart, Brandon Scott Hull, the gunman, last worked at the FedEx warehouse in 2020. The chief said he believed that Mr. Hull had worked there until autumn, but he did not know why his employment ended. In March 2020, Brandon Hull's mother had contacted law enforcement to report that he might attempt suicide by cop, according to Paul Keenan, the special agent in charge of the FBI's Indianapolis office. The Indianapolis police placed Brandon Hull in a mental health temporary hold, Mr. Keenan said, and he was interviewed by FBI agents based on items observed in the suspect's bedroom at that time. They did not find him to be harboring violent, racially motivated ideology, Mr. Keenan said, but the authorities did take a shotgun from him, which was never returned.
Aperture. Depleted uranium made a spectacular entrance on the battlefront in 1991. During the First Persian Gulf War, bombs and shells made with this high-density metal